Okay, there we go. So welcome to This Black Girl Podcast. I am one half of your host, Lola. I also go by ola.miss.lola on Instagram.
And I am the other half of your host, Hildiva, also at The Hildiva on IG. And we are so glad to bring you our wonderful guest today, Mr. Jack Decker, also a host of a wonderful game show called Interrogation. Is that correct?
Yes. It's a simple deduction game show. Two contestants compete against each other. First contestant has up to 20 questions. The second contestant has to beat their score. And it's all based off the old parlor game of 20 questions. You know, person, place, thing, vegetable, animal, mineral, I think it's another name for it. There was an old game show called What's My Line, but they just focused on jobs. Well, back in the day, What's My Line was a phrase you'd meet them at a cocktail party, and they'd say, what's your line? Meaning, what's your line of work? Mm. Mine does all topics. It's just that. I mean, each competition series is 5 videos long, and they're released individually. And now I've gone into shorts. So I take that 1 2-person contestant episode, and then I make 2 short videos of them individually, like a single contestant episode, and then it's under 60 minutes long. Very quick, very the total opposite of the regular show, because my show has no time limit. There's no champions. We chit chat. There's a majority of the video is actually chit chatting with the guests, whatever they want to talk about. But in the shorts, I just down to questions and answers, and bam, 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 done. So, cool. Anyways, that's what's going on. That's what I'm hoping eventually to have be a full time occupation. But right now, it's just a hobby.
Cool,
nice. So my question to you, as we get to know more about you and to kind of delve into our realm a little bit further, you do the YouTubing as, I guess, your hobby, your enjoyment that you want to make full time. What do you do, I guess, as a supplement, as the day job, the monotonous part?
What's your line?
Okay.
For the last 3 years, I've been a trucker.
Okay.
2 years of... first year I was an OTR trucker, which is over the road, which is long haul trucker. The last 2 years I've been a delivery driver for, I'm not sure if it, for a soda company. And a year ago, I don't know if the camera can see it, but a year ago I shattered my left elbow.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh. And,
yeah, I was on a job, car. Ran me over, but fortunately just ran over my foot, and we wore steel-toed shoes, and it was the lightest car. The ER doctor said it was the lightest car you could be hit with, which was an MGM Midget, burgundy. I was coming out of a grocery store, coming around my truck, and this car just buzzed right in front of me, almost hit my truck. I pushed myself back, but that put my foot out there, and I pushed myself into my truck. And my foot hurt a little bit. I was jumping around. Never saw who the driver was, male, female, elephant.
You know?
My boss, I have 3 bosses above me, a supervisor, regional manager, branch manager. Mm-hmm. And the branch manager was just like, nope, call the cops, make a report, you know, and then the cop, and then I said, well, should I go to the emergency room? He goes, oh yeah, go to the emergency room. You got to get this x-ray. And, you know, he's going through the whole, he's been there forever. You know, this is nothing new to him. So here you're going through this, and this is new to me. I said, so should I drive my truck there? And he said, well, leave that up to the ER. And the ER said, well, the 911. And they said, what foot was run over? And I said, my right foot. He says, oh no, we do not want you to also pain your, because that's where I, for accelerator and brake.
Exactly.
Right.
He says, it was your left foot? Maybe. Your right foot? No. And then we had, I won't tell the town, but basically Elmer 5, came and took the statement, et cetera. There was an old grocery store, had no cameras outside. I'll drive around and find this person. There is a tourist location. So I know, I'm almost certain that this is a tourist. And I know that they had to know that they've hit me. And I know they didn't break because it was on gravel. So if they had hit their brakes after hitting me, I would have heard the gigantic rumble of that. They did. Right. If anything, they accelerated. Okay. And so that deputy went out trying to find them in this town. The store manager tried to find them in the town. Went to the emergency room. They x-rayed my foot. It was red, but no fractures, no broken bones. Okay. The next week, my elbow started feeling weird. And then 2 days after into that week, I heard a lot of pain, and they took eventually an MRI, and I had shattered my left elbow.
What? So you were 2 days not knowing you had a shattered elbow walking around?
What happened? A week. You have two elbows. You have actually two joints in your elbow. You have two joints in your elbow. Mm-hmm. When I was recovering, my foot was the one that was hurting. I was hobbling around at work, and you know, all the jokes that my boss and employees were making, you know, and I just kept them working. And then when it came the weekend, I rested up. I didn't move at all. I just put my foot up, says, "Well, heal yourself, boy." And Monday, foot felt fine. And actually, when it came back to regular color, it went from red to black and blue to brown and yellow. Then eventually by Monday, it was almost just normal. And I was like, cool. Okay. Yeah. A little run over. Not a problem. And then I'm out there lifting. As a delivery guy, it's one of the most physically demanding jobs you can have right now. Mm-hmm. You move up to 50 pounds cases. And so you're constantly moving. I mean, I went from OTR, which was you sit in the truck for 10 hours a day, you know, your whole battle is not becoming ballooning up in a gigantic, you know, being insanely fat, to doing that. And I actually went from 275 to 250 because of the job alone. It's just very demanding. Oh, wow. And so on Monday morning, I just went back, and then my elbow started feeling weird. I mean, just like I never felt it weird that before. I broke the elbow a year before, had a plate and three screws in it, and fully recovered, full movement and everything. And anyways, went back to work, and then just started feeling weird. And then the next day, it started feeling catching, like how it catches when it moves. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, Tuesday, it felt weirder and weirder. And then, just before I had pain, I just unloaded, 36, 50 pound cases of bottled water at a gas station. Mm-hmm. And I was just feeling really weird doing that, but I just, you know, plugged my way, you know, pushed my way through it. But then when I went to, Menards, I don't care. I don't think they care if I tell who they are. And they just had a tray of broken glasses, you know, just nothing, and almost no weight to them, you know. Mm-hmm. And they were on top of a pallet. So I naturally just reached up to take them back. And that's when the pain hit. And so I've been on workers' comp for the last, that happened June 30th of last year.
Oh, wow.
It was just now I'm having nerve problems, it's just painful. I can move it around, et cetera, but if I try to lift something with it, like even a pound, it causes me pain. Mm-hmm. I start up new physical therapy tomorrow with a new physical therapist. I'm hoping that they'll get me back to work, or at least get me to where I can be an OTR trucker again, a regular trucker. I don't know if I'll ever be able to go back and being a delivery driver, because now I only have one joint in my left arm. Fortunately, the joint that shattered was of the bone that when you twist your hand like this, that's because you have two bones in your arm, and the one that there's a basically kind of like your load supporting joint when you arm curl, that's the one needed. But the other one enables you to do this and to hold it, it's very important. Otherwise your hand would just you would have any control over your hand, you almost like sling around. And so that's what but we'll see. So you know, that's what I'm hoping to get back, at least to going. And I love doing OTR trucking. It was just we have, I'm in here in America, and we have just beautiful country. There's not a, there is not a part of America except for the cities that, that I don't like. And this, the only reason I don't like the cities is because drive a 53 foot truck through any city and you'll find out just how much you hate the cities.
And OTR. Like, what does OTR stand for? Sorry.
What?
OTR, is it like off the road trucking?
Oh, over the road. Over the road. Long, it's a long haul trucker. Like I'm I'm now a daily trucker, which means I return to my terminal the same day I leave it.
You set out.
And I go home every night. I have every weekend off.
That's good.
And I'm working for, I mean, I don't care. Dr. Pepper, hopefully don't get upset because I'm very happy working
for Dr. Pepper.
I love A&W. Matter. I can't drink cola, but, but I mean, they treat me very well. They treat me very well in workers' comp. And so in comparison to the trucking companies I've worked for, they treat me very nicely. And I mean, when COVID hit, they gave us a 20% pay increase to keep us working.
Oh wow!
So I went from essentially $70,000 a year to $84,000 a year, and that was for 6 months.
What? That's good.
Yeah. Well, and especially in comparison to Pepsi, they gave their drivers a $1 an hour raise, and then cut all their hours. Mm-hmm. Dr. Pepper, we don't deliver to restaurants and bars. It's just not profitable. If you eat if you drink a soda at McDonald's or anything that. Soda companies make no money off of those soda sales. That's viewed as advertising by soda companies. It's just, we make our money off of retail. When you go to a grocery store, that's where our money is made off of. So when you go to Burger King or a McDonald's and you see Dr. Pepper, that's actually distributed by Coca-Cola. And it's just because they want, there's such a demand for Dr. Pepper that Burger King says we want Dr. Pepper, and we'll bring that on into. So when the COVID hit, majority of their truckers, their businesses to restaurants and taverns, and so they all shut down and they all lost their hours. Coca-Cola is even worse. Their message to their drivers: be thankful you have a job.
Wow.
Yeah. Here's the thing. There's a huge demand for truckers, has been for many, many years. Yeah. Their truckers all quit. And so I was driving around and here's a warehouse foreman and a manager and a sales rep driving their trucks because all their drivers quit because of that attitude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask because of the trucking, just because, it's long hours. It's extended hours. You can be gone anywhere from, a week, 2 weeks, depending on how long, where you're driving from.
I was a nomad trucker.
Oh yeah? So you had the room in the truck.
Yeah, well, all OTR truckers have a sleeper unit in the back. That's it's a bunk bed. It's really minimal. I was all reefer driver, which doesn't mean I smoked drugs. It means I drove a refrigerated truck. You're called a reefer.
Okay.
And all reefer drivers have refrigerators in their sleeper units, because if you don't, there's a gigantic refrigerator right that I'm towing behind you. I'll just snip the seal and put my milk in there and shut the door again. So that's why all reefer drivers get refrigerated, because we'll open up the truck. We don't care.
I want to ask with this job, just because it can be demanding socially, in the sense of you're on the road long hours. You don't always get to interact with.
If you want to get divorced, become an OTR trucker.
I was gonna ask, how does that affect relationships?
It doesn't work.
Really? Okay.
Another joke name for OTR truckers: a divorced trucker. And also, because when truckers get divorced, they go to I was a nomad trucker, which means I lived in my truck. I didn't have a apartment, I didn't have a house, I didn't have a car. I gave all that stuff up. My only bill was my cell phone bill. So the money I was making from the truck was almost pure profit as far as I was concerned.
Okay.
And that was when I was a new trucker.
Right.
And once you get a year, I've now have a year, I'm constantly offered jobs. You know, just you can, if you're selective, and a lot of them aren't, they lose one job and they quickly run to the first trucking company that hires them. But if you just take your time, you can easily, I have a staying offer $2,000 guaranteed a week, which is $104,000 a year.
And yeah.
Good benefits, et cetera. And that one would pay for you my cell phone bill. And they'll,
wow.
Well, and give me a new cell phone every 3 years. And that's because they want, the reason why
they're doing that.
Well, the reason why they're doing that is so that you put their apps on your phone.
And make sure you're doing your job.
In a way, so they don't have to buy you a phone and give you a phone.
Yeah.
They're reimbursing you for the phone, so they don't have to do that for you. And plus, you don't want to have them, you don't want to have a company phone. Because then everything that you do on it, they have legitimate claim.
They have eyes on it.
What you're doing, who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And today, we all phones are essentially just tiny tablets. And so, I mean, I watch videos all the time. I don't want to find out what the videos are. And I watch.
What are you watching?
I watch, you know, baloney. I mean, bland ones. You know, YouTube videos, et cetera. But I still want them to know what YouTube videos I'm watching, especially because I watch a lot of trucker YouTube channels.
And
a lot of them, there are some good ones and there are some I want to
circle back to the term I guess divorce truckers, because you're saying if you're an OTR trucker, like a relationship's out of the cards, essentially impossible, damage relationship.
It's not impossible. It's a different type of relationship you want to have. You're a sailor, okay?
Yeah.
You can be a sailor, which is a girlfriend in every port. You can do that type of there are many truckers that do that.
There are
many truckers that have actually been married to multiple women, and women don't even know of the other families.
Oh no!
Well, because you're traveling back and forth, and so and they've done that. That's super common, but it's not unusual. It's also just a horrible the trucking industry, being a trucker, has the turnover rate for truckers is between 200 and 250%.
What?
Which means every trucker you see on the road, realize that at least two other truckers have joined and left the industry in that year that one trucker stayed driving.
Wow.
And there's a lot of trucking companies that are very disruptible. I'm not going to name them because I don't want to get sued by them.
Right, but
what would they do?
But my first trucking company was one of them.
Okay.
I would join trucking. I was a marketing consultant. And without going into detail, just things went wrong. And I had been sick of seeing four walls of the office. And so to be the absolute opposite, I thought, what the hell? I'll be a trucker. Called and talked to a bunch of recruiters, and one of them lied to me, and they're known for lying, and I did not know that. If I could talk to people that were wanting to be truckers, there are trucker YouTube channels that you should listen to and watch all their archives. There are some really good trucking companies out there. Dr. Pepper is one. If you want to be a daily driver and you don't mind really busting your ass and lose weight, it's a great way to lose weight. Delivery driver.
I was going to say, I have a friend who is a trucker. He works as a trucker. I think he's now a daily trucker, but before he used to be like OTR, but not super long distances, like maybe
he was probably a regional trucker there.
Probably one of those, but like, you're absolutely right. Ever since he started doing that, he obviously was making much better money, so he's more financially secure. He lost a whole bunch of weight because he was hella heavy before, and then he got like fit, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. So he enjoys it because I don't know, he's a little bit more withdrawn. Like, he would consider himself a bit of an introvert.
Introvert helps you if you're a trucker. I'm an extrovert.
Yeah. Okay.
When I was doing OTR, my daily routine was going, you sleep in your truck. Mm-hmm. And I was a nomad, so I didn't even have a home to go to. Didn't want to. To me, it's just stupid to be an OTR trucker and having a home, which you might see 2 days out of every, if you're lucky, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And some a lot less. And it just didn't make sense of renting an apartment when basically I have the apartment, my quarters in the back. It just didn't make sense. But there's a lot that do. It's lucrative. And being, if you're a daily driver, you're giving up money to being a daily driver. If you're a regional driver, you're giving up money to be a regional driver. Daily drivers get to go home every night.
Yeah.
Usually they have their weekends off. Regional drivers get to go home every weekend. Okay. Right. But then OTR truckers, we may not go home for 2 weeks. And unfortunately, that part, because I knew a trucker before I became a trucker and talked to him a little bit about it, I knew that was the way to go, was to get rid of the car, to get rid of the apartment, and get rid of, I just condensed everything down to essentially a duffel bag. And had a friend, a really good friend of mine, he has my stuff. He let me store all his stuff. He had a gigantic barn, you could say.
Yeah.
And I stored it there. And I just, a lot of truckers, a lot of new truckers don't understand. It's not a job, it's a lifestyle.
Right. Okay.
And if you become an OTR trucker, you're entering your own separate, it's a separate world. They're literally called the last cowboys.
The last cowboys.
If you knew who the real cowboys were, they drove cattle. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, very similar to what truckers are, they're away from home for long periods of time. But even those, they usually always rode with other cowboys. Truckers today, you might have. And part of a team, which is something you should never be. You should never be a team driver, because you'll sleep in the truck while the other one drives, and then while you drive, he sleeps, and you never get good night's sleep. The roles just keep. I mean, when I was doing team, that was part of my when I was with a trainer. I was literally bounced. I'm 275 pounds. I'm 6'3". I'm not a small little guy, and I'm. bouncing around in the bunk bed. If he stops, you wake up. You're never like a deep sleep. You're always conscious of what's going on around you.
Being disruptive.
He slows down for construction. I wake up. What's going on? He stops into a gas station. Well, that's the time you have to go to the bathroom. Yeah, and that's the other thing that really sucks, is that you're peeing in the bottle when you're a solo driver.
Oh God, yeah.
Imagine being a female trucker. Imagine being a female trucker.
It wouldn't be a bottle. It would have to be a bowl.
There are very few.
Yeah.
And it's very dangerous being a female trucker.
Oh, I can imagine. Definitely.
When I was driving, they had you hear trucker news, and like one woman was killed in her truck, and they didn't find her body for I think 7 days, because once you're 3 days, they didn't find her body until 3 days, because if I pull into a truck stop, okay, I could be there for up to 3 days, because I could have a 34-hour reset.
Which okay. Means
up 70-hour. As a trucker, you can only drive 70 hours in a week.
Right.
And if you get too close, you have to have a 34-hour reset, which means you can't drive for that period of time.
Okay.
So it's really common to have at a truck stop trucks to pull in, and people won't even notice them if the truck doesn't move for 24 hours. Everyone assumes, oh, they're doing a reset.
Right. You know?
And so people typically don't go to a truck until it's been there like 3 days. And that's when they went and found her dead body there. And it was heat and everything. And she's just like this. And a lot of women drivers, they like a lot of male drivers will have these tiny little dogs. you know, tiny little dogs. Okay. I have one right now. It's a pepper, 7 pounds. Okay, that's...
Oh, that's cute. That's just like a little thing.
But, well, women drivers will have Doberman Pinschers, pit bulls.
Right.
Mean dogs. And they will mount them. I mean, you come close to their cab, those dogs just roar.
Come for that ass. I love it.
If you the danger that they were in,
right? Yeah,
they should. They really should have that. And but it's... You can't have a relationship in it. Really? Unless you just want to be, if you're into one night stands, but there's also lot lizards, you know, which is ladies of the night.
I've heard of the term lot lizard. I've heard of that term.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. I want to know, I guess, what kind of category do you find yourself? And if you're going back into this lifestyle, like, are you going to be the sailor and have like a girlfriend in every city? Are you going to be, you know, hunting down lot lizards? Like what's your angle? Or do you already have like an established family and they're going to be like...
I've never been married. I've been in long-term relationships. I almost got married twice.
Okay.
Dodged that bullet twice. And I'm glad I dodged. I go to high school reunions, and you know what they say? They talk about how many times they've been divorced.
It's oh, like, no. Wow.
And I've never been married. I came close twice. One with a woman from Cameroon, Africa, and another with a woman from Shanghai, China.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're pimping all over the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just... my best friend in college was from Pakistan. And... I don't know. I'm fascinated by foreign cultures, different cultures. I was raised by a professor of psychology. My mother was a teacher, a second grade teacher. I have a degree in psychology. All my brothers had degrees in psychology. And when during the summers, because they're a teacher or professor, they would have August off, and that's when we would get in the RV and see the country. I mean, as a kid, I saw the country all the time. When I was in school and the teacher would talk about Gettysburg, I would talk up and say, I would tell the students what it was like to walk around on Gettysburg. It's a lot different when you look at a textbook, it's one thing, but when you actually walk around in the land that you're in, the Grand Canyon, unless no photograph, no matter how big the photograph you can blow it up to, will ever do justice to the Grand Canyon until you see it. And if you're smart, you'll see it at the crack of dawn when the light comes over and there's dew on the rocks and the sun hits it and vaporizes the dew and it lights up. It's just absolutely beautiful. Wow. And then it's unbelievably hot. You know?
That sounds awesome. Okay, but so you mentioned you've almost been married twice and you considered it dodging bullets. So I wanted to ask, what were those red flags that kind of popped out at you that made you decide, you know what, I can't do this. This isn't the right decision for me.
I consider to have only had really two long-term relationships, serious relationships. Everything else is just dating. And so my first long-term relationship was with, I won't give her last name.
You can give a fake name. We don't.
Okay. Her English name was Elizabeth.
Okay.
And her African name was Cheney, Chenyi.
Okay.
And when I got to know her, everyone knew her as Elizabeth. And then when I found out what her middle name was, and that's common in Africa, have an English first name, and then you have your African name, and then you have your family name.
Yeah.
I found out that it was Cheney. It just sounded neat. And so I started calling her there. And then eventually she could tell who was before me and who was after me. Because the people before I was with her would call her Elizabeth. The people that we got to know after would call her Cheney. So it was... But she was very traditional. The It was my first real relationship, first, and
now
I maybe should have married her. I don't know, but she was my first real.
Yeah,
didn't have what could I compare against dating? Right. You know, I mean, you go on a date, you don't know that person, you don't know, and there was just. There was a period of time when I felt like I was being treated like a dog. Go here, stop, you know, this type of stuff, being very, very controlled.
Mm. Okay. So things went from loving to more demanding.
Not demanding, more control.
Control, okay.
Not, she wasn't demanding anything, in fact, just the opposite. She was very, I started knowing her when I was 27. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. I was a virgin until I was 27.
Okay. Wow. Congrats.
Well, I would never recommend. No, I would never. Recommend.
Never mind.
No.
Do not recommend. 0 out of 10.
Do not wait. Stupid mistake.
Really?
Just stupid. I wish I had never waited that long. Never. But I was also, you have to understand, when I was young, I was very religious. I almost became a minister. A lot of that had to do because when I was 13, my father found out he had leukemia and was told he had 5 years to live. I did the stupid kid things. I was trying to make deals with God, I do this, could you make my dad live a little bit longer? Just stupid shit. And I look back as an adult going, oh my God. But I also understand, as an adult, what can you do as a kid? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
I never argued with my father after that. Because I remember, he was told 5 years to live, so now he's terminal. And mm-hmm. so that if you're a child of a terminally ill parent, they commonly send you to meet others like that. Okay. And I'm sitting in this round, not room, but a round of tables, chairs, like a circle, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were purposely put in between new child of a terminally ill parent, mm-hmm. and a person that was even in some cases, the person to my right was an adult and he had been a child of a terminally ill parent.
Okay.
And I listened to everything. I record everything. And just things burn in. I don't forget things.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there listening to these old ones, and a lot of their regrets, well, some of the regrets were like, the last conversation I had with my father was an argument. And I have to live with that for the rest of my life.
Right.
And I was as a kid going, oh, fuck no.
I'm not going
to have that happen to me. So I never with my father. I never went against his rule. But also, I was a bright kid, and my father's a bright man, and so we could communicate on an intellectual level.
Nice.
He had actually told my mom when he didn't think anyone was hearing them talk, that I think of all my sons, I was the one that's going to handle his death,
the most, like
the best.
Okay. Yeah.
And I felt that was my father saying that I didn't care about him. You have to understand. I now understand that. I'm talking about, you're 13 years old and you're trying to figure things out. I mean, I went to the military partly because I wanted to defend our Bill of Rights. I'm anti-democracy, but I'm pro-Bill of Rights, which is anti-democracy. The limitations that it puts on democracy. But the other reason why is because, when I was 18, I found out my father was going to die in 5 years when I was 13. When I was 18, I realized this is the year. And so I thought, I wanted my dad to have some measure of peace. And so I thought, what can I do as 18 that could give my dad some measure of peace? I'm very bright. But even I couldn't finish college in 1 year, 4 years in 1 year to do it. So I knew that. And so I said, okay, college is out for now. And so I came up with, I'll join the military. And that way I could show, I wanted to tell my dad, I'll be okay. I have a job, I'll be okay. And I remember telling my dad that later. He thought that was a dumb reason to join the military. He was like, you know, but he also was touched that I was concerned. My other brothers didn't give him. I wanted my dad to feel rest.
Right.
Not be worried about me. I'll be okay. When I was in the military and I went to a technical school down in Waco, Texas, and he came down to visit me, and I realized, whoa, because you get a little bit of leave time between your technical school and when you report to your base. And I was, okay. I knew I was going to be visiting him in less than 30 days. And here he's driving down to visit me. And like my dad said, I'm smarter than the average bear. I put two together. He thought, oh my God. And I was like, holy shit, you don't think you're going to last 30 days for me? And so it's very important for me.
That must have been stressful.
To the restaurant that I paid for the bill. That it was just, and he understood how important it was for me to pay that bill.
Yeah.
I wanted to show him I was okay. I'm an adult now. I can take care of myself. Here, I will treat you to this dinner, not you treating me like a child. But then he lived long. I mean, I went back and I saw him after that. But that was the last 18th. I mean, reason I didn't have long time relationships. When I was younger is because of my father.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because I found, well, think about it. 13. What happens at 13?
Puberty
hits. This is when you like girls, all this type of stuff, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Was, holy, my dad's going to die. One of my gods is going to die. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to, that was enough. To me, it was like.
Yeah, so your focus was just like him for the next 5 years.
I don't need to lose anyone else. Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone else to come close to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm dealing with this. During my junior and senior year, I skipped more than 50% of my school year.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I'm a bright kid. I showed up for just a test, and I still graduated with, I think, B average.
Well, that's good. Wow. Yeah, I won't say kids at home, try that. I wouldn't say that.
I was trying to deal with it. And mm-hmm. I drove to this, and I didn't. My father is a functional alcoholic. It was just meant to drink after work. That's all it means. He didn't drink for work or during work, he drank after work.
Right.
I have brothers. They're all recovering alcoholics of one extent or another. I have two older brothers. And I have a really older brother that I 6 years older than me. So, you know, I was, what, sixth grade when he was a senior in high school.
Wow.
You know, I didn't, but my second oldest brother was only 2 years older from me.
Okay. And so
he was really my older brother. He's the one that, what I would assume older brothers do. They look after you. They kind of clue you in how the world works, you know.
Right.
Here's what you're supposed to do on a date, you know. Literally that kind of basic stuff, you know.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know, did you go on dates though? Like, because I know you were 13, a bud.
What? I knew that you, not knew, but, and there was no social pressure. How can I put this? No one pressured me.
Okay.
I always knew how I have shin splints, so I can never run away. So I learned how to fight. And I mean, if you either run away or you fight, and I didn't have that one option, so I learned how to fight.
But I mean, like, did you go on dates with girls? Like,
yes, I did.
Before, like, what you said, because you're a virgin until you're 27.
When I was going to school, it was homecoming.
Mm. Prom. Okay.
The only ones I took girls out on dates to, and I took them on it, and and then I just not dump them. I just didn't interact with them again.
Okay. So it was just like you brought them out for show, had a good time.
No, not for show. It was just you were expected to go on these on homecoming and prom. And I don't know why. To be honest about it, I don't know why. There were some girls that were very into me. I think it's because I had a very lone wolf persona. Mm-hmm. And that's just because I learned my father was going to die at the age of 13. It just screwed up our life.
Right.
You know, I mean, and before that, when I was even younger, when I was in five, I think we figured out maybe I was like 5 years old, I was in a hospital room. When I was really young, I was in and out of hospitals a lot. Okay. And one time, this kid next to me made friends with, you know, just like they, you know, no kid gets a room by themselves. You put them with other kids. I mean, to be you'd put a kid in a room by themselves in a hospital. I mean, let's just terrorize the kid. You know, let's not give him an ally. Let's just stick him in this room as an adult. You're like, I like to have a private room. Kids are like, no, I like to have others, you know?
Yeah.
And so you'd always have another kid in the room with you, and you strike up conversations, you chat with them, etc. You share your toys, you play with, you know, joke with them, and you go out there, do surgery, etc. Well, he went into surgery, he never came back.
Ooh. That's terrifying.
And no one told me. No one would tell me that he had died on the operating table. And he wasn't supposed to die on the operating table. It wasn't that type of surgery, but he did. And so the nurses never, so they came in and all of a sudden he's not there. And I'm expecting, you know,
yeah, like, where's Danny? We're going to play tic-tac-toe.
Where'd he go?
Yeah.
My nurses would tell me. My mom didn't tell me. She, at that time, you could have a parent in the room and she's basically like a lazy boy. She'd sleep at the foot of your bed.
Yeah.
She didn't tell me. But then when the parents of that child came in, they offered me his toys. And I knew the kid was dead.
Yeah, of course.
Because I knew how I've been in the hospital in and out so often that I spent days deciding which of my toys I was going to take. Because you're only allowed so many.
You're
told this is how big the box, however many toys you can get in there. So you like, you're too big, so I can get two of these toys in here. You know, so those toys were like a security blanket for you.
Yeah.
Your favorite toys. And for a parent to offer your toys to them, and just, wow, he's dead.
Yeah. He's dead.
Yeah. And of course.
I found out, and like, remember my mom? She wasn't in the room. 30 years later, when I'm talking to my mom, she goes, oh my God, you knew? You know, because eventually,
that's a little late.
You know, when I was in there, this happened. And I was having one of those deep conversations you have with your mom.
Yeah.
She's like, holy shit. And she never used those language. No. But anyway, she was, wow, you knew. And I said, where were you? You know? And she says, oh, I was out in the hallway crying. And the nurses were all, she says, all of them were putting their heads below the counters because they were crying. And the nurses, before they would come into my room, they steal themselves up, come in, because you see, the thing it is, I'm going to surgery the next day.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right. So
they don't want to freak me out. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'm not, like my dad said, smarter than the average bear. I'm sitting going, okay, no, something's not right, you know? And so that changed me forever. From that point on, I looked at life differently.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because I realized that you have to understand the kid mentality. Okay, not talking about an adult, as a child. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's important to you? I realized he would never have another Christmas.
Right.
Another birthday. And then I was like, holy shit, I will. And then that changed me forever, for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I never asked my parents for an allowance. They gave me one. I never asked for a raise in my allowance. Never asked for one.
Yeah.
They gave me an allowance. I put it in the bank. Actually, I worked out how the interest rate down to the, the 27th decibel, until my dad told me that 0.00001 penny wasn't really worth much. Because I found out you interest compound daily. So I said, holy smokes. And then I started working at home and no, it doesn't.
Yeah. That's funny.
But I mean, I realized that my mom would make me cookies. I stopped asking for things because I felt like I'm alive.
You're grateful enough for just that.
How can I complain about anything? That kid will never have another birthday.
Right.
It's true. To him by his mom. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that changed my whole perspective.
Yeah,
for sure. Now, did it at all? So that, as well as the passing of your dad, I remember you saying like that, you know, knowing about it, especially beforehand, affected your relationship wise. Now, did you ever want to have children? Do you have any children? Nope. Do you have any ports with children? I don't know, sailor children? I don't know.
Nope. Well, I didn't have sex until I was 27. Mm-hmm. That's partly because I was very religious at the time. I lost all my religion before then. But at that time, I was still influenced by my childhood minister. Mm-hmm. And my childhood minister basically said, well, don't you want your first one to be special? And I thought I'd like that first one to be special. And it was very hard. I mean, I went into the military. Some really bad things happened to me in the military. Scarred me. I came out and I spent years recovering from what they had done to me in the military.
Now, sorry to interrupt that because that's very interesting. Like, now,
but that,
not
that
to
have
you, yeah, not yeah. to have you repeat any trauma or anything, mm-hmm. but is this like verbal abuse? Is it physical abuse? Is it,
in
you know, self-esteem? Yeah.
Have either one of you served in the military?
No. Neither one of us, no.
And I have no idea what it's like or anything, so that's why...
They own you, period. They literally own you. This is the closest thing we have today to slavery.
Wow.
I mean, they can literally send you to your death. They can send you on. They can knowingly send you on a suicide mission, knowing wow. you're going to die. Okay. Mm-hmm. They completely control you. I find it humorous that leftists are so anti-military, because the military is the perfect example of communism. It's a totalitarian society. From your abilities to your needs. You have to pass aptitude tests to even be considered for jobs. They don't care if how much you want to be. I really want to be a mechanic. You don't have the aptitudes, you don't get to become a mechanic.
Right. Wow. Okay.
In the when I was going through basic training. Now again, I'm smarter than the average bear. I topped off all my aptitude tests. I had the choice of any career I wanted. Mm-hmm. Another story. They tried to recruit me for communication, which is, I found out from them, encryption service. Okay.
Okay.
And so the brightest of the bright tried to get recruited to that. And I did not jump at the opportunity, and they really wanted me to come in. Because also they, when I applied, I gave over some of the psychological tests that my father had given on me.
Right. And
one of them was my IQ test. Our one was a Stanford Strong Campbell aptitude test and our stuff like that. And so let's just say I was a prize that they'd like to have come into encryption. So I had a colonel come in and try to pitch me, but my oldest brother's survival instructor, and he sent down two of his buddies to get me. and to recruit me into survival. And I'm allergic to nature, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, I wear long pants always because if I have grass, if it rubs against my skin, I'll get a rash.
What?
I'm allergic to nuts, chocolate, dairy, tomatoes, cloves, fruit with the seed and the meat. Pizza I can't eat for because it has cheese, tomato, and the crust is usually burnt. I can't eat soy. That means soy flour. They put soy flour into everything these days.
Oh my gosh.
Hold on. My question is, if you're allergic to so many things, how do you manage being an OTR trucker? Because those truck stops are not a it's not a Whole Foods where you can get certain gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free. Like, how do you manage that?
The truth of the matter is that Walmart is the trucker's best friend. All truckers go to Walmart. Idiot truckers buy stuff at the truck stops. You pull your truck into a trucker-friendly Walmart, and not all Walmarts are trucker-friendly. They should be, because without us, they wouldn't have Walmart. This pandemic here has temporarily made people appreciate what truckers do for
country.
But in reality, if all of us truckers went on strike, you would starve to death. It's over. You go into Walmart and you buy it just like you go to Walmart. You can buy everything you need to buy in Walmart. So I would buy these family packets of tuna, not the cans, because it's just the juice and so forth, but you just rip them apart and you can eat them right out of there. So, I mean, in the morning, I wake up and I have a packet of tuna or a packet of salmon or a flavored tuna. I drink water. I drink flavored water a lot. I eat a lot of protein and sugars. I've always been physically fit. I'm not as physically fit as I was because I used to go to the gym 6 days a week. I was kind of very, very strong.
Well, that's good. I was going to quickly ask you about, before we wrap up, because we are unfortunately getting to our time.
Oh, sorry.
No worries. Your interrogation show, though, really quickly, what's the most, like, do you ever have any outrageous moments?
I just started. Some things that have happened, there's one contestant that got it in two. You have up to 20 questions, and he guessed it in two. It was a location. It was New York City. He says, "Is this a state?" And he just guessed it in two. It blew everyone away. That record will probably stand for a very long time. There's just humorous ones. There's one that says they can only ask me yes or no questions. They can't ask me, is this or this or this? Because then that's a multiple choice question. Questions. And one of them says, is this male or female? And they said, yes. as opposed to no.
Fair enough. Okay.
It's just kind of funny stuff. And it's also interesting. I chit chat with them in the mid video. I do a chit chat with them, and it's very interesting to find out what they do and why they're doing their channel. A lot of it, they're on to promote their channel, and that's cool. But others, I've been having more than some contestants come back again and again, and you really get to know who they are, and it's really neat to you start feeling attached to them and that type of stuff. So but I haven't really been on long enough to have an outrageous moment, it's done here. Like, it's done with Zoom, four box design.
Well, that's great. Well, what?
I was gonna say, sorry, but just one last question. So it's two guests like versing, and then you're essentially the host and moderator.
They ask me a question. I'll answer them, and then it's one goes first. They have up to 20 questions. And then whatever score they get, the second contestant has to guess it underneath that.
Okay, got it. Sorry, what were you going to say, Hildiva?
Then the next video, which places. So the first contestant becomes the second contestant, the second contestant becomes the first. And because when the second contestant is going, the first contestant is actually on screen because they already know the mystery.
Right.
And that's where a lot of the fun comes in, because they can, you know, it's the humor. Some sit there just like a lump and log of others are bringing out like cats and trying to make everyone laugh. And that's really enjoyable for me. And that was just
wonderful. Wonderful. So real quickly, I was just going to say, just let everybody know where they could find you, Mr. Jack, where they could find your show. They want to talk to you about anything, if they have anything to add or, you know, any questions for you, where can they find you?
Well, fortunately, my channel's name is Interrogation. And there's a lot of, if you put in the YouTube search engine Interrogation, you'll come up with a lot of police interrogations, which is not what I do. So if they want to find me, it would be putting in into the YouTube search engine Interrogation Game Show. And then they'll very likely see one of those would be what I'm doing, Interrogation. I have a website for it. It's called interrogationgame.com, but that's mainly for so that people can apply to be contestants for it. I'm not really, you know, they could try to find that, but it's mainly just finding it there. I'm hoping that eventually this thing takes off and I'll place a little bit higher on the ranking, and I have to get to 100 subscribers so that I can have my own personal URL. And so that'll help, because right now it's just YouTube.com/ and then a random series of numbers.
I don't even try to
23.
That's fine. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on our show.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, no problem. And just to close it out, I was going to say I am Hill Diva. You can find me at This Black Girl Podcast on IG with my lovely co-host here. My personal IG is at The Hill Diva. And maybe we'll end up on your game show one day. Who knows?
Contestant one, contestant two.
Yeah, I'm not making it happen. But I'm your other co-host, Lola. Again, you can find me on Instagram at ola.miss.lola. Make sure if you have a question, concern, you want to be a guest on our show, to send us a message on our Instagram page, or you can email thisblackgirlpodcast@gmail.com. Again, if you ever want to be part of Jack's show, Interrogation, you can also visit his website at interrogationgame.com. So with that being said, thank you so, so much for listening, for being part of the show. Thank you so much for participating, Jack. We love talking to you. And you're very welcome. And for everybody else, have a wonderful day, and we will talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.